This is Rusty Tanton.
And Amber Ray.
And you're listening to Mostly ITP on the Georgia Podcast Network, the show focused on all things Atlanta and sometimes elsewhere.
Okay, it's November 17th. This is Amber and Rusty, and we are sitting here at the Wren's Nest with...
Lane Shakespeare.
And what do you do here?
I'm the executive director of the Wren's Nest. I basically do everything.
All right. And what is the Wren's Nest?
The Wren's Nest is the historic home of Joel Chandler Harris, creator of Uncle Remus, the guy who recorded the Brer Rabbit stories.
And for people who aren't familiar, can you give just a little bit of background on that?
The Brer Rabbit stories were brought over from Africa by the slaves. They were once known as the Anansi stories, and as the times and circumstances changed, they grew to become the Brer Rabbit stories, which were told, handed down from generation to generation. Harris, who grew up on a plantation, heard the stories, and he was very well read, very well educated, and later recorded the stories for a popular audience at the Atlanta Constitution.
And this was his house?
This was his house for 27 years.
Okay. And he was editor of the Atlanta Constitution for how long, you said?
25 years. He worked alongside Henry Grady. They shared the assistant, associate editor position.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And why is the house called the Wren's Nest?
The house is called the Wren's Nest because wrens made a nest in the mailbox. And neighbors would walk by the Wren's Nest and say, ah, the sign of the Wren's Nest. And the name stuck.
I think that's such a cute story, but I like birds.
Well, as we were walking through the house, you gave us a brief little tour of the place before we came in. You had the original mailbox sitting on the mantel, and you said that he built another mailbox next to it.
Right.
And then the Wrens took that one over, too.
Right.
And so then they finally
had to draw
the
line.
Right.
Yeah, we got to get our mail.
Yeah.
So how long have you guys been blogging here?
We've been blogging since September of 2006, so maybe 14 months.
And your blog is really good.
Oh, thanks.
And, like, it really is. Yeah. It's a really well-done blog. And so, I mean, I've been using it as an example, honestly.
Oh, great.
Because there's this other organization. I mean, I guess I can say who it is.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm going to say anything bad. Historic Augusta. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to urge them to start blogging because mm-hmm. I really think they should.
Right.
And they've been a little hesitant, but I sent them your blog, so maybe that will... motivate them.
Cool. Great. Thank you.
But how did you guys first decide to start blogging?
Well, when I got to the Wren's Nest, there wasn't even a website here, and there wasn't a factually accurate brochure or anything like that. Really no way that anyone could connect with a house museum, let alone one that had been neglected for quite some time. So I figured it was a good way to put a human face on something that might be boring or considered boring to some other people.
And did you have a blog yourself beforehand?
Nope. I learned this from scratch. I just researched WordPress one night and stayed up all night reading about it and had a blog the next day.
See, it can be done.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
So what kind of benefits, expected and or unexpected, have come from the blog?
Well, it's weird because I'll go to, like, fancy cocktail parties and someone, important will come up to me and say... introduce themselves, and I'll introduce myself, and they say, oh, I know who you are, I read your blog. So I'm like, uh-oh. Because I kind of write it for myself, not knowing who's reading it, or, I'm kind of shy about, releasing what I write to other people. And so
right.
A blog is a good way for me to kind of write it for myself and think that nobody else is reading it, but then I find out that all these other people are reading it, and it's a little scary when the time comes. But it's really gotten people interested, coming back every day, reading about the Wren's Nest, and which had never happened before.
So. Yeah.
I find it interesting. There's been a couple of instances recently where you've related some things that have happened in modern pop culture, like Uncle Remus gets a plug on The Office or something mm-hmm. like that. So
yeah, it's a good way to tie it all in, with. Current happenings. And like you said, I like that it's sort of puts a human face on mm-hmm. on the Wren's Nest because you seem to write it sort of, just like a regular person. Like some people seem to get stressed out about, if I'm starting a blog for my organization or my company or whatever, like, what writing style should I use? How should I write it? And it's almost like they go too far of writing it basically like a press release.
Starts to sound like a press release.
So, I mean, how did you make that call of the style to write it in?
Well, you know, when the Wren's Nest hired me, they knew they weren't getting a professional. And so I like to keep, I like to keep it as casual as possible.
Like to live up to those expectations.
Right, right.
But, or down.
Yeah, but yeah. But if I'm reading a blog, you know, I want to read someone that read about someone or something that I can relate to, mm-hmm. that has something to do with my life, and will say things that are kind of unexpected, I guess. Because I could use the blog to really promote everything that the Wren's Nest does is being uber positive and there's no controversy whatsoever, but that's just not the case. And
right.
so mm-hmm. I think if you're blogging, it's important to be yourself, be funny when you can, and also, you know, go out on a limb and take a controversial opinion, even though it might not immediately be the best thing for your organization.
Something else I read on the blog was about last year, this was one of the buildings that was on the endangered list
for endangered
for
properties list,
endangered properties list, mm-hmm. and it's now off the list now.
Right.
And could you just tell folks a little about that process and maybe how I don't know how you've gotten off the list and sort of the state of the funding, because I know there was some I read on the blog the finances were supposedly a little out of control last year.
Right.
How have you progressed from that into it not being on the list anymore?
Right. Well, you know, showing up every day is a big part in answering the phone. But, you know, when I got here, the reason they couldn't hire professionals is because the Wren's Nest was about $112,000 worth in debt.
Yeah.
And nobody knew that number. It took me about a month of answering phone calls from creditors to figure out who we owed money to.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a slow process. And I wrote a letter to about 300 of my most benevolent friends. And that kind of got me a leg up. But ever since then, instead of losing $50,000 or $70,000 a year on a $100,000 budget, over the past year, we paid about $47,000 worth of debt off. We recently won a grant for $130,000. You know, the place is interesting to a lot of people. We've been around for 94 mm-hmm. years, and a lot of old codgers really have a lot of fond memories of the Wren's Nest, so that makes it easy for me.
So what kind of things do you do here? Is it just tours, or do you do other things?
We do tours 5 days a week, Tuesday through Saturday, but we also have storytelling, and that's kind of our bread and butter. You know, the house is remarkable, the condition it's in, mm-hmm. but the storytelling is really the living thing that we try to promote through our podcasts, through school outreach, things like that. It's mm-hmm. it's something that people can immediately connect to, whereas the house, you're stepping back into time. The storytelling, someone's coming to you and telling you things that you can relate to immediately in your life.
Yeah, one other thing I noticed on the website is you had Google videos of some of the storytellers.
Mm-hmm.
That was neat,
that was
because
really cool.
I got sort of a sense of them before I even came over here.
Right.
How do you find storytellers? How is it determined who's going to do the storytelling?
Well, that's a good question, because
yeah.
I'm not a professional and I don't really know. I've had to learn a lot over the past year,
yeah.
and luckily the Wren's Nest has had many storytellers actually mm-hmm. over the years that were willing to come back and reinvest their time in the Wren's Nest once we had kind of steady leadership and you know, we were open mm-hmm. 5 days a week and things like that. So
they've been around for a long time.
They've been around, and over the past year we've kind of reignited their interest, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And so they go out to different places, or people come here to...
In the past, it's been people come here, and we, you know, the past year we've reinstituted Saturdays at 1 o'clock. It's a time you can always have storytelling here at no extra charge. We also, over the summer, started the Wren's Nest Ramblers, mm-hmm. and that means they go all over the metro Atlanta area telling stories to any community groups, school groups, retirement communities, corporate events. Whatever is boring, we make it not as boring, I guess.
The Brer Rabbit stories seem like they make, they're just the right length for podcasts and for Google videos and things like that. Because telling one, I noticed the Google videos were all about 2 to 3 minutes long, which
mm-hmm.
seems to be about people's attention span.
Right.
I know y'all just started the podcast. You want to, mm-hmm. would you talk a little bit about that?
The podcast is, yeah, you're right. It's something
yeah.
we just got into,
yeah.
And we're just starting to invest some time into it. Basically, it's a good thing for teachers and amateur mm-hmm. storytellers, or people interested in the art of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get to hear my sonorous voice for a couple minutes, but really it's all about the storytelling. And we compare different facets of storytelling, such as songs and using animals and what the Tar Baby story really means, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So what about Song of the South? I know there's some controversy, and people think that you guys are the Song of the South Museum, but
right.
you're not.
Right. Well, Song of the South, you know, my stock answer is when people ask about Song of the South, I ask them, have they seen Pearl Harbor starring Ben Affleck? They say, well, maybe, okay, but I know what you're talking about. And I say, well, have you heard of Pearl Harbor, the actual event? And they say, yeah. Are those two the same thing? And they're really pretty far apart. Song of the South is a great and very influential movie, but it's not the same thing as the Joel Chandler Harris stories. And a lot of people confuse those more so than other things for one reason or another.
Well, I mean, you look at how Shakespeare plays are played out, and people always put their own modern interpretation on them. They'll do it from set piece standpoint. I mean, but I guess Song of the South would just be another interpretation of these stories.
Right.
Would be maybe the way to describe
them. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's something we're big into. You know, the stories involve dialect, and some people like the dialect, some people don't. But what our storytellers do is they put their own spin on the stories, and so you can mm-hmm. really see how a story can change from voice to voice. Mm-hmm. And Joel Chandler Harris had his own voice. Our mm-hmm. storytellers have another voice, and Disney has a voice all its own.
As far as Harris's stories, I know when we were walking through the house, we were talking about sort of the countercurrents that where on one hand Joel Chandler Harris was a very progressive guy, believed in you know everyone should learn how to read and general African American welfare, that kind of thing. But on the other hand, there were some parts where I don't know exactly how to describe it, but like for example, you have a picture hanging on the wall that's kind of a stereotypical black child eating a watermelon kind of thing, and so you have sort of these constant underlying countercurrents of both the progressive part of them and maybe the not so progressive part where he fondly remembers his days on the plantation and that kind of thing. I think that's kind of reflected in the Uncle Remus character himself. I mean, mm-hmm. there's the countercurrents there. I don't really know where I'm going with this, actually. mm-hmm. I think I'm just kind of rambling here, but I guess last night I was looking at a volume of someone else's interpretation of the Brer stories, and this author chose to almost take Uncle Remus out of the picture entirely.
Right.
I guess there's this kind of constant reinterpretation of Uncle Remus's role in the story, and you know, mm-hmm. Song of the South also had this sort of issue where people kind of looked at Uncle Remus's role, and he was sort of, I don't know, viewed as maybe a little too stereotypical, something like that. I guess how do you reconcile that telling stories here?
Well, you know, it's a complicated mm-hmm. question. It's a complicated issue.
That's why it took me 3 minutes to ask.
Right on. But I think a lot of people hear the word Uncle Remus or hear the words Uncle Remus, and it's easy to have a knee-jerk reaction to that. They think 19th century black character must be stereotypical. Mm-hmm. When really, it's interesting because Joel Chandler Harris was a white man soon after the Civil mm-hmm. War writing stories where Uncle Remus is the obvious protagonist mm-hmm. of the stories. And he's kind of correcting the premise is Uncle Remus tells stories to a little boy. And in one story, he's telling the story of the deluge, or what we would know as the Noah's Ark story. Mm-hmm. And Uncle Remus is telling his version of the story, and the little boy says, well, where's Noah and his ark? And Uncle Remus says, don't you worry about that. This is my version mm-hmm. of the story, and I'm imparting it upon you. Mm-hmm. And so really, it is all about interpretation. And the important part is that Joel Chandler Harris did that with respect and integrity for the Uncle Remus character. Mm-hmm. And I don't think a lot of people realize that. At the same time, you know, we don't mind if the Uncle Remus character is drowned out. It's all about different perspectives of the story, how you interpret it your own way. But it's important to realize that there's more than just a knee-jerk reaction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've never read, actually, the original stories, the Joel Chandler Harris version, but we were reading last night in a version, a volume of all the stories that we found at Barnes & Noble. Somebody was saying that, like, whoever wrote the foreword, and I can't remember the guy's name or else I would say it, but said that the originals were really hard to read now because they were written in such heavy dialect.
Almost like reading Middle English.
Have you read them? Are they? I mean, I think that's just interesting. And I don't know if I have a question here, but I just think that's interesting linguistically. I'm a linguistics nerd. That was my major in college.
Okay, great.
Because it's... it seems like that's sort of the only documentation we have of what Black speech was like at that time.
Right.
Yeah, there weren't really recordings.
It wasn't written
much,
there. They couldn't make recordings. It wasn't written down. And so I think that's fascinating.
Right. And a lot of people consider, so the issue is a divided one. A lot of people consider Harris's work is very beneficial, and some people just dismiss it. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of people don't look closely enough at the dialect because it is an important part of preservation, especially with another minor character, Daddy Jack, who a lot of people will say that, oh, it's just like Uncle Remus, but it's an entirely different dialect. I can't remember what the dialect is called, but it's from the Georgia coastal... What is that called?
Gullah?
Yeah, the Gullah Geechee dialect. Yeah, sorry. Well, that's... I'm going to blog about this today, but I saw the film No Country for Old Men last night, the new Coen Brothers movie. And if you ever watch the Coen Brothers movies, one of the things that makes them so so great is their use of dialect. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people look at the Uncle Remus stories and they'll say, oh, that uses dialect, that's terrible. That's really what makes a great story. If you look at Flannery O'Connor's works, mm-hmm. or the Coen Brothers' works, the dialect is really what drives the narrative.
Mm-hmm. So getting back to the blog and all that, mm-hmm. I noticed that you guys were doing stuff like Beltline cleanup and that kind of thing.
Right.
What other kind of sort of community involvement stuff have you been doing?
Well, what we're trying to do is really root ourselves in the community through education. Mm-hmm. So Harris was a publisher and an editor. We had a publishing and editing camp here this summer. We're really into reading, writing, publishing and editing for children, especially in West End neighborhood. I think that's going to be a great way to really connect with the community in a way that the Wren's Nest really hadn't done before.
Very cool.
And as far as the Beltline is concerned, we are a historic museum, but we're also a part of this community, and it's definitely important to not only help out the West End community, but also the city of Atlanta in dealing with people on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. I noticed when you were talking about this building being on the endangered buildings list, mm-hmm. You also mentioned another building, which is near the Art Center,
The Castle.
The Castle. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I just found that interesting that you're also relating this place to all the other buildings that are around.
Right.
I didn't have anywhere to go with that.
Well, I think historic preservation is really important, not only just for the sake of preserving old architecture, but it really helps weave the fabric of a successful city. If you look at a lot of older cities, they've done a great job, and a lot of people criticize Atlanta for its lack of historic preservation. Mm-hmm. And really, ultimately, it's a financial boon for the places growing up around it, because it mm-hmm. ultimately gives the city a lot of character.
Mm-hmm. Gives people a reason to stick around.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything else you would like to add for everyone who might be listening?
Future plans.
Like I said, we're trying to become more of an educational institution as well as a historic preservation one. Mm-hmm. We're expanding really quickly, and hopefully you'll see some more of us in the newspaper, hear more of our podcast, hook up with our blog.
Something's happening December 9th here, right?
Victorian Christmas, December 9th. It's a free open house. It's also Joel Chandler Harris's birthday, so we can cut some cake, eat some cake, have some storytellers, maybe a few choirs, stuff like that.
Cool.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. And what's the URL of the blog?
WrensNestOnline.com/blog.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
The song you heard in this podcast was Flux by Drop Trio, available only on magnatune.com.
Thanks for listening to Mostly ITP on the Georgia Podcast Network. Visit us at gapodcastnetwork.com. If you have a question, comment, or drunken rant, leave us a voicemail by calling 678-389-9441. Who knows, it might be featured in a podcast. You can also email us at info@gapodcastnetwork.com.